Liebe Freunde und Kollegen, in diesem Podcast spreche ich auf Englisch mit Roberto aus Italien über die Grenzen von direkten Kompositen und wann man eher in den direkten Bereich gehen sollte. Da das Ganze Teil des GSM1 Symposium ist, sprechen wir natürlich auch über das Zementieren von indirekten Kompositen, Hybridkeramiken, Keramiken und natürlich auch Glasfaserstiften. Das ganze Symposium ist kostenfrei zum Anschauen und eine Vorbereitung zum 100. Geburtstag von GC. Viel Spaß beim Hören.
Welcome to today's show. I'm connected to Italy with Roberto. Welcome, Roberto.
Hi, George. Nice to be here with you today. Thank you very much for this kind invitation.
We're going to talk today about looting and indirect restorations. So the question which comes to mind, where do you start? Where does your direct restoration end? And where do you start with your indication for indirect restorations?
Yes, well, the topic is pretty wide, is pretty controversial for sure, because you know that our dentists more skilled with direct composite restorations and others that prefer indirect for many different reasons. I'm mainly a prosthodontist. I've been working at the university in the division of prosthodontics for more than 20 years. So you can imagine that my background is mainly indirect. Okay. Anyway, nowadays composites are for sure very smart materials, very interesting, both for mechanics, biomechanics, and aesthetics. So according to me, maybe that the dimension, first of all, of the cavity to be filled, secondly, the number of restoration to be made, and then mainly it's the most important parameter, the occlusion, can be the variables that can lead me toward a decision for a direct or indirect restoration. For sure, you have to also consider that the average dentist has to take care of his time. So maybe a direct restoration is a one-shot appointment, but it's longer than an indirect restoration. So it depends on the attitude and the skill of the dentist, for sure. But I guess that according to my experience at the university with the undergraduate students, for sure, the dimension and the complexity of the restoration is the first issue to be targeted, for sure.
Actually, it's kind of interesting. I thought you would be, say, for example, the size of the contact point. That's usually like a quite prosthodontic way of thinking. I'm surprised that you didn't say that.
Well, as I told you before, for sure, it depends on the attitude and on the skill of the dentist. I can give you my experience with indirect restoration and the contact areas, because it's more than 15 years that I've been working with CAD/CAM systems and with digital technologies. And I can tell you that if you work on your own, I'm thinking about the designing of the restoration, or if you refer to a dental technician, you will have for sure very different outcomes according to the software you're using, according to the material. So in my opinion, I've been working with a couple of dental technicians for many years. And for example, when we started treating lithium disilicate and ZLS, so zirconia reinforced lithium silicates, with the same offset parameters of the software, we had completely different results. So the management of the contact areas, both in direct and in indirect restoration, is pretty complex, according to me. For sure, you can imagine that the indirect management of contact areas for the average dentist is something safer, it's something simpler, because you just have to refer to a good shaping, a good designing of the restoration during the CAD/CAM phase, the CAD phase, more or less, okay? So I agree with you when you say that the management of this topic is very, very uncomfortable sometimes when we talk about direct restoration. That's why, firstly, I told you the dimension of the cavity and the number of cavities you have to treat is very important, because of course, if you have just a first class, maybe you have no problems, even if it's pretty wide, Whilst if you have a second class or if you have several MOD cavities to be managed in the same appointment, maybe it's very much more difficult for a direct restorative approach.
I think when it comes to time, every dentist understands that not every patient wants to come 10 times for a single restoration. And even sometimes quadrant appointments are kind of a hassle with directs, especially when it comes to occlusion.
Yes, definitely, definitely. I also think something, if you are talking about direct restoration with a very skilled dentist, maybe you can manage six anterior direct veneers in a couple of hours. Whilst if you have to treat, if you have to deal with the dentist with no great attitude towards this kind of restoration, maybe the time becomes longer. So in my experience nowadays, for sure, a prosto treatment requires at least three or four appointments, but I can shorten them according to my current workflow. For sure, you know, it's always a borderline topic, this the one you chose for me today. So it mainly depends on the expectations of the patient. It depends on his compliance, because first of all, we have to think that composite restorations can be extremely natural tooth-like in their appearance, but they have to be somehow controlled over time, whilst more or less, I say more or less because ceramics have, of course, their margins, their interfaces, but usually the main aesthetic result is much more comfortable for the patient. So it depends on so many different variables, and we have not to forget that the cost of these restorations can be very, very different. Although I can tell you that in Italy, in our market, in our dental market, if you go to top-notch restorative dentist, you can pay as much as for an indirect restoration sometimes. It depends on the target of the dentist and of the patient, of course.
Well, you have some popular dentists for composite in Italy.
Yeah, definitely. Definitely and, we have.
And one famous quote from Vanini is, well, I can do a natural-looking central incisor. It's going to cost you €1,000. Either I do it direct and just add something or indirect and cut something away, but yeah, the price is the same.
This was exactly my point.
When we're talking about composites, do you also have experience about indirect composites in the posterior region?
Yes, definitely I have, because I started this kind of clinical pathway when I was a PhD student in Siena with Professor Marco Ferrari, because at that time we were using materials just like gradient indirect and gradient core to make this kind of indirect restorations. For sure, the performance, according to me, is just in the mid, in between a direct and indirect ceramic restorations, for sure. I can also tell you that it's about 4 years that we are working at the university in Naples, at the University Federico II, where I'm actually teaching with my director, Professor Fernando Zarone. We're working with hybrid ceramics and resin nanoceramics. So, you know, it's a very huge family of new, innovative and smart materials that are just in between composites and ceramics. According to our experience, they are much more similar to composites than to ceramics. And I can tell you that the average performance in the medium term, of course, because I have data looking back at no more than 4 years, of course, they are really encouraging, because the quality of the indirect treatment of composites is, according to me, excellent. You can take advantage in the cementation using the same material to lute your indirect composite restoration. So you will have just one adhesive interface instead of two, and this could be a very interesting point from a clinical viewpoint. And you have to consider as well that finishing and polishing of composite restoration, even though they are direct or indirect, is much more easy and reliable than one on ceramics. If you are finishing a very, very thin margin in lithium disilicate or something like that, you can have some kind of microchipping at level of the margin with an higher exposure of the luting agent. So it can give you problems over time. So for sure, the general management of indirect composite restoration, according to me, is really, really user-friendly and really interesting. Also because in our dental market in Southern Italy, you can make the cost much lower than a ceramic in direct restoration. So according to our patients, you know, we don't live in a very rich area of Italy. And so we have to treat usually average people. So they cannot afford 1,000 euros for a restoration. Maybe they want something more than a direct restoration, and you can make them happy with this kind of hybrid situation.
How do you loot these indirect hybrid ceramics? You already mentioned it, but let's go more in the details of the looting.
Okay, we have to make, first of all, kind of didactic classification of the materials, because you know that when we talk about indirect restorations, we mainly think about ceramics. So I think about the conventional glass ceramics, just like feldspathic, just like leucite, just like floral ceramics, and so on. But nowadays, I guess that no dentist in the world would use feldspathic ceramics for an overlay, for example, because of the brittleness of the material. Although I can tell you that if we move to the anterior areas, I still use feldspathic ceramics for ceramic veneers in some specific cases. All these materials are etchable, and this is a very, very good point for the cementation. If we move to other kind of ceramics, just like the polycrystalline cores, first of all, we have to say that they are not really ceramics, because if we talk about zirconia, or if we will going talking about alumina, maybe next year, because some manufacturers are proposing alumina once again, so we are going back to the 20,000 more or less. These materials are extremely resistant, but they are not etchable. So you know that nowadays, between researchers and between clinicians, there's a kind of friendly struggle about the possibility to adhesively lute this kind of restorations. I mainly refer to tabletops or onlays, overlays, inlays with zirconia. And we can go back to this point in a few minutes. In between these two classes, we have all this new family of hybrid ceramics that mainly refer to ZLS or PICM, so the polymerly infiltrated ceramic networks. We have, there's a very interesting recent paper by Markus Blatz classificating these materials in a new way. I refer to the clinical approach to these materials rather than to their mechanical and chemical composition and properties. And according to the percentage of composite or ceramics, you can go for etching, you can go for sandblasting, you can go for coupling primers, just like silanes or MDP, or you can even mesh all these kind of approaches. Of course, if you decide, for example, let's think about hybrid resin nanoceramic. If you want to go for etching and sandblasting, you have to respect a strict workflow, because you have prior to etch the material and then to sandblast, of course, and not the opposite. So in my opinion, usually I go for etching when I have a completely glassy material. So I mainly refer to feldspathic ceramics, to leucite reinforced ceramics, and to lithium disilicate. When I have to face with hybrid materials, just like ZLS, in that cases, I usually etch the material, although I know that the glassy phase is much lower than a traditional glassy ceramics. And then I do not like to sandblast the material. So I prefer to use coupling agents, just like MDP, just like MDDP, or even novel materials, just like the universal self-adhesive systems. Whilst when I have to deal with polycrystalline cores, in that case, as a clinician, I prefer to adopt the mild sandblasting. So I use alumina particles of 50 microns, and I do not like to use the conventional adhesive approach, because I've seen with my eyes at the SEM, the scanning electron microscope, that although I make a very aggressive etching of, for example, zirconia, I cannot achieve that cob-like aspect just like the glass ceramics. So in that case, I prefer to go for a chemical approach to adhesion. I mean mainly MDP, I mean silane coupling agents, and so on. At the same time, I can tell you that we are working on the new systems. It's more or less 3 years, and we are achieving very good clinical results. But if you go to the chemical department of my university and you ask them, may I etch a polycrystalline material? They say, no, you cannot etch. In the meanwhile, the development, the implementation of the new molecules in the adhesive systems, I mainly refer to universal resin cements, self-adhesive resin cements of the latest generation, I can tell you that the results right now are very, very interesting. I cannot tell you they are completely comparable to the adhesion we can achieve on enamel with the three-step system. But the numerical values of adhesion are really, really interesting. I always say one more thing. Anyway, we do not have to forget that data from the lab or data from manufacturers, I refer to megapascal in terms of bond strength, are always recorded in a very clear and controlled situation. The bench test is completely different from the adhesive cementation in a Bruxer, for example. You can achieve excellent adhesion, but then during the chewing, during the parafunctions, maybe you will have some interferences at level of the interfacial area of adhesion because of mechanical stresses. So we have to consider that the oral cavity is a very difficult environment to be faced. So I've described you my standard approach to different kind of situations in terms of looting, but I can tell you that I always make very complex reasoning when I face a patient. So the patient-related variables are the most important in guiding me toward choice of a material or a looting system.
Last week, I also used one of the universal looting systems, and it's kind of interesting since the AEP primer, which was recommended, and they kind of told me that this primer gives a better adhesion, and the cement, the universal cement, shrinks to the tooth. Can you tell us what this has for clinical advantages?
Yes, I will deal with this topic in a couple of weeks at the GC Mini Symposium that we are going to discuss online, because unfortunately we cannot be in presence yet. And I can tell you that the AEP is a very interesting material according to me, because it's extremely easy to use, because it doesn't need any kind of polymerization. It is not very operator dependent. You can use it on any kind of substrate. I don't want to spoil anything about my future discussion. Anyway, I can tell you that I'm using it on titanium basis for implant prosthodontics. I'm using it on any kind of non-retentive preparation on teeth with any kind of material. I can couple it with conventional primers or even without anything and just with the cement. And I do not have right now laboratory evidences yet, but I can tell you that from a clinical viewpoint, the material coupled with new universal resin cement is very, very interesting. I have no experience in terms of post-op sensitivity by patients, and right now, finger crossing, of course, I had no failures, no problems with the material in any kind of these restorations, indirect, in anterior and posterior, and both tooth supported and implant supported. So I guess that this will be the technology of next 20 years, maybe.
Okay, so when you look back a bit in the past on your adhesive looting, do you think this will change now in the future with these materials?
Well, it will change just like the old-fashioned self-adhesive resin cements, mainly in posterior areas, according to me. When I talk to my students, I always make a great distinction in terms of field isolation. So when I have to manage a complete clean substrate, just like enamel in an anterior area for direct or indirect restoration, just like ceramic veneers, I'm still using a conventional three-step approach. Not only because of the bone strength, if you correctly manage the clinical procedures, is definitely higher because we have numbers telling us that enamel dentin bonding systems nowadays have the same range of megapascals in the lab, but they do not have the same range of megapascals in the mouth because we cannot control the intrinsic moisture of natural tooth tissues and of the oral cavity. So I'm using a very good material, but because of my limited skill or because of some kind of contaminants in the oral cavity, you can have a decrease up to half of the megapascal bone strength values. So in anterior areas, I still prefer a conventional three-step approach, for sure. Also because I've seen with my eyes that the problems related to staining and discoloration of the margins with the three-step adhesive and luting systems is very less evident over time than if we use any kind of simplified system. And I mean any kind. So the two-step or the one bottle or even the universal luting. For sure, in posterior areas where you have to manage sometimes deep dentin, so an intrinsic moist substrate, or when you do not have, for example, very much time to work, because George, let's say not all the patients are really compliant in terms of isolation. I have different patients that when they see the rubber dam, they are kind of scared. So you have sometimes to lute, for example, four posterior onlays, and you have to be quick. So for sure, this kind of simplified system will change our clinical approach. Of course, we have always to keep in mind that the conventional principles of adhesion, of direct restorative or indirect prosthodontics are the same, just like in the 80s. So we have to be very precise, very careful, very clean in all our steps, in all our clinical steps.
Since I kind of always also know you for glass fiber posts, so we have to ask you, luting of the glass fiber post, mm-hmm. is it a good idea to use this universal luting resins, or should we stick to the not old-fashioned way, to the standard dual cube way?
No, for sure, the fiber post is another world. I really felt this topic because, you know, when I was a PhD student in Siena, my PhD thesis was about fiber posts. So we have dealt with this topic for more than 15 years. And I can tell you that nowadays, I still use fiber posts and very, very different clinical situation. And since my first glass fiber post, I've always used self-adhesive cements. Because of the quality of adhesion you can achieve in a root canal is very, very different from the adhesion you can achieve on a superficial dentin because of the anatomy of the dentin. So I've always preferred to use this kind of simplified systems. Although I can tell you that going against the indication of the manufacturers, I always make a kind of degreasing of the root canal before making my adhesion. And I can decide to degrease with ethanol, for example. So I generally use 96% ethanol. So just rubbing and brushing my bristles inside the root canal and then waiting for the air to do all the job. Or sometimes I use phosphoric acid, but I'm not intended to etch the root canal dentin. I just want to clean it from the debris. Oh. And then I use a one-shot approach. So I generally use simplified dual cure adhesive systems of different brands. And I do not like to light cure inside root canal the bonding agent because we have seen that many, many times you can achieve a kind of increased thickness that can interfere with the interfascial adhesion of the fiber post. So I prefer just to place my bonding And very quickly, I put the cement inside the canal and on the tip of the post. And I use the post to gently push over the canal the cement. But I can tell you that the self-adhesive cements, or nowadays the universal cements, are for sure the first choice for this kind of approach, according to me.
Interesting. Usually in the past, I used like the premium bond with the DCA, but I still light cured it because I was told it has some benefits if you light cure it. So you would say your recommendation is not to light cure it at all?
Well, it's not a recommendation. It depends. It also depends on the type of post you're using. I'm using a kind of system that is in the shape exactly identical to the burr you use to prepare the Dover space. And I've seen in my samples that many times if you use a kind of thick bonding agent, you can achieve at the tip of the root canal some increased thickness. But it's completely up to the operator. I can also tell you that many manufacturers producing simplified resin cements advise not to use the bonding. So you just use the resin cement and everything is up to the cement. So I guess that you can choose in between the two approaches according to your attitude. Basically, I still recommend the use of bonding instead of the solely the cement, because I know that you can increase the flowability of the cement inside the root canal. Don't forget that a root canal is a very, very deep first class. So we have a C factor, very not advantageous for the polymerization shrinkage. So I mainly use the bonding to increase the flowability of the cement rather than for purely adhesion. Okay.
You might get some questions from me during your lecture.
I'm pretty sure about that. You know that Leticia and all the GC staff asked me to present something about fiber posts, but I'm not sure after this discussion with you. No, just joking. For sure, we will have so many topics to discuss during the mini symposium. It will be interesting, for sure. Shall you attend the mini symposium during my lecture or not?
Well, we'll do it. There's no reason not to attend. I just looked up your title of your lecture, GSEM1, the one that simplifies
the simplified
approach. I think you already teased a lot for your lecture. I think everybody is quite excited.
Yeah, definitely we have. And as usual, I have a great problem because I'm used to cut and paste my lectures during the last night before the presentation, whilst this time I have to make everything quicker, but I'm a good point. Maybe within tomorrow I will finish the outline of the presentation for sure. Although I can confess that I have one case that I will cement next Tuesday, and I would like to put some pictures of this case because it's interesting. We will see, okay.
In my lecture, I always try to have a case of the same week. So I can tell them basically that's how I do. In some cases, I can't show, just can show a 5-minute follow-up. Just a 5-minute follow-up. When you can tell everybody, but let's see how it will look in a year. Right now, I like this part. I didn't like this part. And this way, due to the pictures, you can see in 1 year or maybe 5 years, if you still kind of like this case and you have pictures to show, it's always good.
I always, when I look at my pictures of 1 week before, I'm always not satisfied because I always want to reach something more. There, you know, I'm convinced that we can learn from everybody and in any case, for sure. So we just have to go a little further for day by day in our clinical practice. The aim of this lecture will be to have just like some clinical cases to show how the GSEM1 can be really versatile. As regards the follow-ups, I agree with you that if you perform your clinical step wisely, and I'm sure that we are average dentists, but we try to do our best every day. I guess that the characteristics of nowadays materials are really reliable. So I'm pretty sure that If you made a very good restoration, just like yours, because I've seen your lectures and you are a top-notch restorative dentist, I'm sure that in 5 years you will have exactly the same picture, maybe with a little staining, because our restoration live with our patient. So it's normal that the aging will occur for sure. But I'm pretty sure that 5 minutes or 2 year follow-up will be more or less the same.
So I'm looking really forward for a lecture, Roberto. Thanks a lot for your time.
Thank you very much. And now thank you for dedicating some time on Saturday to this podcast.
Thank you too. No, actually we can end it, but it's quite in the early in the day, so it's nice to have a start with nice weather today. Yeah, in Germany there will be nice weather today.
Yeah, what about the weather in Germany? Here in Italy?
Today it will be nice.
Okay, great, great, great. Because here in Italy, until 1 week ago, it was still spring, late spring, but it's 2 days that it's just like summer. So it's very nice to go out just for a walk because, we have summer restrictions yet, but we can go out for walks to the seaside. So that's
actually
good.
Last week, we even had snow in some parts of Germany. So it was a mix out of rain and snow, and everybody thought, well, this can't be true.
Wow.
Then I'll say goodbye and see you soon online.
Thank you very much, George. Have a nice weekend, and thank you for your kindness, and see you very early. Bye.